Hello, and welcome to a Vashon Minute, where we take a moment to focus on one island issue or one island person at a time. I'm Susan McCabe, your host for this episode, where we're going to meet the man behind the monthly jams in the VCA atrium. Both man and event, he is Bruce Ferris. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you find Vashon Island, and where did you come from?
Yeah, the short story, we came from Capitol Hill over in Seattle, of course, and we had been looking for a place to sort of expat ourselves for a number of years. We'd spent some time in Portugal and also in Spain and then central mountains of Mexico. But wherever we went, we realized that there was no more beautiful place than the Northwest, frankly.
Really?
Yeah. And besides, I didn't want to have to learn Portuguese. It was just going to kill me. So we ended up looking up and down the coast here while I'm still working. And the quick story is that while in negotiation on a property in Gig Harbor, a dear friend of ours called us and said, I just saw this cute little house down on the waterfront down on Maury Island. And we went, what island? And she said, Maury Island. And we happened to be down in Tacoma at that time in Gig Harbor. And she said, drive up, take the Point Defiance ferry, hop across, and go take a look at this little house. And we were looking at a much larger place that we would be able to have musicians come and stay and so on. And this is a little two-bedroom, one-house house. And that was it. We came over. We fell in love instantly with this little house. Wrote an offer then and there. I'm also in real estate in Seattle, so I was able to write my own offer. And we got accepted the next morning and then woke up that evening and said, what the heck did we just do, right? And that was the start of it. That was in 2019. We ended up doing work to it over the course of time, but still working over in Seattle full-time in 7 days a week. And COVID hits. And at some point, I believe it was March 15th, was when Inslee declared the lockdown. And that stopped all of that business. And we were right on the edge of the chop zone, and we realized that we needed to get the heck off of Capitol Hill because we were convinced that as old people, we would die very soon. And we came over, toothbrush, toothpaste, t-shirts, masks, and literally in a blow-up bed and started living at our little place with nothing there other than the bed and the toothpaste and the t-shirts. Thriftway, of course, at that time was doing the 10-foot distancing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So we met nobody for a number of months here on the island.
You got to know people by their shoes.
Yeah, and that was it. And then quickly, I put out a little ask for help on the Facebook Vashon page. Alan Kaplan kindly responded, and when I met him, he said, oh, I Googled you and you're a musician. And I said, well, I used to be. I'm not really much of one anymore. And he said, no, you're a musician. And then he connected me with Chris O'Brien. Chris came over, played piano with me at my studio and said, what do you want to do here? And I told him I'd love to play music on the island. And I assume it'll take me a year or two to meet some musicians. And he said, well, how about you do a concert at the VCA, say, a month from now? So everything just went boom, boom, boom like that. Absolutely unexpected.
One would say it was meant to be.
One would say. And it has been that way ever since. The experience of being on the island has just been fantastic. The connections with people, and from a very selfish point of view, I was literally playing once every month or two in Seattle with only one or two of my very dear friends. And the opportunities to play music constantly here has just been an incredible gift to me. But on the side of that is the gift that has been of me being able to bring over these musicians from Seattle and play with them and in the connection with the audience and the audience growing love for that. I mean, it's just, to me, it's just an amazing opportunity.
Well, and it's been an amazing opportunity for your fans.
Yeah, I know.
Guessing you went to the VCA atrium because you had this little house and you couldn't bring musicians there to jam?
Well, yes. I think a better description is that the only way I was going to get them onto the island would be able to have money for them. And so, So initially what I suggested to the VCA was, you've got this beautiful atrium. It just sits there. You've got two big pianos. You've got a Kawai and you've got the Steinway. Why don't you bring the Kawai out into the atrium? I'll be happy to pay the musicians to come over if you'll let me put out a tip jar initially. And with only maybe two or three performances, it started balancing out where I wasn't having to pay out of pocket for their costs to come over. And pretty soon it started growing, the audience. And the word got out amongst the musicians over in Seattle that there was a really great experience over on Vashon, playing for these amazing people who were very attentive and super loving and very supportive of their music. So I started getting phone calls from people saying, you know, can I come over? And this is after I'd had almost a 15-year hiatus from performing most of the time. So
you must have a heck of a reputation.
I thank you. I really don't. I mean, I do with some old people who are still alive like me, but most of the younger people have no idea who I was. And, you know, there was a time when I was working 7 nights a week as a musician, but that all changed a long time ago. So this has just been a last chapter, you might call it, of just incredible gratitude. And these musicians keep coming over. They love it. The audience continues to love it. It
yes.
continues to grow.
Yes.
And all I feel like is if I can just stay out of the way and not mess it up, it'll do just fine. All I have to do is show up and play bass.
Playing bass, yes. And you are obviously a well-known jazz bass player.
There was a time. How about, we'll put it that way.
I had occasion to hear a quote from a famous bass player, Christian McBride.
Oh.
And what he said was, being a famous bass player is like being a famous plumber. I don't get invited to the party, but you need me. So is that why you bring all these other
I think
musicians
that's
over
why.
Here?
I don't know that another musician, another instrument would be able to pull this off. Being able to play bass allowed me to initially to play duet with both pianists and vibraphone players and guitarists. But if I played drums, that wouldn't work. And if I played only piano, then I'd probably only be able to bring over other guitarists and other wind instruments. So being able to bring people who can play chordal instruments has been really instrumental to what I'll call the substance that we're able to present at the performances.
So what kind of musicians do come to your jams?
Boy, it's all across the board. And that's just been another fun thing is initially being able to bring over musicians that I had known years before when I was working full time, and to reconnect with them. But they all, there's a broad spectrum of different types of jazz and it's hard to describe it. Some are what you would call, say this weekend as an example, this coming weekend, that'll be the first weekend in April in case this is on later.
Yes.
It's a very hard swinging pianist that's coming over, Ruhl Lubog, and he plays in the Oscar Peterson style of music, which is a real big time swing feel. And then there are other musicians, say like Bill Anschell, who's another one of the award-winning musicians from Seattle. He plays in a much more open fluid style, more modern. When Jeremy Bacon, my dear friend who's passed, would play here, he played with a very outside style, oftentimes atonal, when he would play. And so everybody's got their different thing. And for me, that's been an amazing experience to be able to, initially it was once every week, now it's once a month, to be able to anticipate who's coming and spend time listening to them on Google, on YouTube, and try to get my head into their style so that when they come, I can play bass that would fit with what they're doing, right? And so each one of these different styles are changing. So this weekend, I'm studying the great Ray Brown, bassist for Oscar Peterson, a very down-the-center style bass player, whereas when I would play with Jeremy, I would play like Gary Peacock, who was a very open player, somewhat atonal, and for a lot of people, hard to even find what the heck is he doing.
So can you, I see you brought your gigantic bass.
Yeah.
Could you give us a little demo of the Oscar Peterson style, for instance?
I'll give it, it'll be of the bass player for him, Ray Brown. So I'll do that and I'll do a little bit of, I'll go from Gary Peacock to Ray. That'd be great. And I want to respond to Christian's comment.
Yes.
The great Chuck Deardorff, who is now gone in Seattle, a very close friend of mine, who actually found this bass for me and helped me buy it. Chuck hired me. He invited me once to do a duet concert with him at the Bellevue Jazz Festival. And when we posted a picture of that, one of our dear friends, Rich, what's his last name now? I can't remember his last name. He posted on that picture, he's seeing two bass players play side by side. He says, "Does that mean twice as many people went to the bathroom?"
Because that's typically what happens when bass players...
And this is a Vashon Minute on the Voice of Vashon. My guest today is bassist Bruce Ferris, who is the founder and the organizer of the Once monthly, is it the first Saturday of the month?
Yeah, it's basically the first weekend. So it's Saturday or Sunday.
First weekend of the month, jams in the atrium, which are catching on like wildfire.
It's been great.
And what time is it? 1 o'clock?
1 o'clock to 3 o'clock.
1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. So we're going to hear a little bit of bass. And this is, tell us again, what kind?
Can you hear this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So Ray Brown, when he would play a tune, let's say Take the A-Train, he would play a much more standard, what we call a 4-beat bass.
Wow.
Now, Peacock, if he were even playing that kind of tune, he would play more like... Pretty atonal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is. So. That's...
yeah.
So many different styles, and the bass player has to blend?
Yes.
Is that the appropriate term?
Exactly. I mean, that's our goal. Our goal is to provide the bottom end note that defines the chord that the chordal instrument player is playing, and also continue to establish the rhythm and the beat of the tune.
I'm looking at the size of this gigantic instrument, and I'm wondering, did you start playing this when you were a little kid?
I started when I was in fifth grade. My mom was a music teacher, and she tried to teach me piano. She tried to teach me something else, but I was a terrible student. And when I came to the Northwest in Bellevue, the first day of school, I'm sitting back down here. The first day of school, the music teacher came in and he played all these different instruments for all these little kids sitting on the floor in the gymnasium. And almost the last instrument he showed was a small kid-size acoustic bass. And I heard him go zoom, zoom, zoom with his bow on the bass. And I stood up and I went, I want that. And I know that he immediately went, oh my God, I've got a bass player, because that's so important in the orchestra.
It's so important and so underappreciated.
Right, right. You got to have us, like Christian says. So I basically started off playing in the little kiddie string group and playing classical, little classical pieces, and didn't get infected with the jazz bug until I was probably a junior in high school. And
what did that?
Oh. I heard a recording of Bill Evans, the great Bill Evans, and the great Scott LaFaro, and also his other bassist, Eddie Gomez. And it was late night. It was midnight. Jim Wilkie was doing his Jazz After Hours program on King 5. He was the program director for King at that time. And I just went, oh, my God, that's awesome. And I tried to drop out of high school at that point. And my teachers forced me to stay, and they let me finish on contract. Because I just had no interest whatsoever.
You just wanted music.
It was music, And I think that's when it really dawned on me that I was a musician first and, a citizen of this planet second. And from that point on, there was no turning back.
What a gift.
Yeah.
How many...
I feel so
fortunate. So few of us get to know who we are and what we want to do with our lives. Heck, by the time we're 20 years old, at 10 years old, you knew...
Yeah, it really hit me hard. So that's it. I've had the opportunity. I had a brief 15-year hiatus due to an issue called focal dystonia, which is common with musicians and people who are typists also get it. And it's a matter where the neurological function of a portion of your brain decides to jumble the signal that you're sending to your fingers, and your fingers do something different than asking them to do. Yeah. And so when that happened, that was just about the same time that technology was coming in. The nightclub scene was changing in Seattle as they did across the world due to different types of entertainment and the internet, et cetera. So I got out just in time. I mean, it was interesting. I was working all the time as a musician, teaching and doing little recording work during the day for, all those jingles that we used to hear on the radio.
Yes,
those
yes.
kinds of silly things. And then I went into real estate. There's a beautiful poster my wife has, Donna, and it's of Frank Zappa, and it was on the LA Weekly, and it's a picture of Zappa, and the title of the front said, Frank Zappa's got advice for wannabe musicians, get your real estate license.
Yeah, that's good advice for writers, too. We are almost out of time, Bruce Ferris. And I just have one quick question, and that is, what exactly happens to produce one of these jams? How do you go about it?
Well, that's a great question. I'll try to shorten it. I spend a lot of time looking online at Earshot Jazz, at Origin Jazz, and a couple other different sources of information about musicians who are in the Northwest. Listening to them online, connecting with them, and then months in advance trying to schedule something that would work with their schedule, asking them to get their material over. I need to write their bios. I've got to get the bios over to the Beachcomber, get the bios pushed into a Facebook page, and then get their music and start practicing on that music. Some musicians, like the one this weekend, will be pretty easy for me. It'll be stuff that I've learned a long time ago. But there are certain musicians like Jovino Santos Neto that I spent 3 months studying his works and was still petrified on the day of performance that I was going to just drop it and did make a lot of mistakes. It was so complex. And then that's it. And the reason we're doing 1 month instead of once every week is that my wife decided that she did not want to continue to not have a husband on a weekly basis.
I can imagine.
You
yeah.
get it. So,
that is a lot of work to make it look and so improvisational.
Well, they say be careful of what you ask for.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of what happened. Well, thank you for having me. It's been really a delight.
Thank you, Bruce Ferris. This is the man behind the jams in the atrium, and he makes it look really easy, but it's a whole lot of work. And if you're not a fan yet, you will be if you attend. That would be this weekend, the first weekend in April. You've been listening to A Vashon Minute. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and grateful for the time you've taken to be with me. Take care. Stay tuned to Voice of Vashon. You never know what's going to happen next.